This podcast is intended for investment professionals. Hello, and welcome to LGIM Talks. I'm Mark Chappell. The flexible working space has revolutionised the office sector of the commercial property market. Anyone who's visited a UK city can't miss these new co-working or flexible office spaces complete with soft furnishings and in-house coffee bars. But with managers innovating with their more traditional office spaces and the difficulties faced by startups who now find themselves owners of huge amounts of real estate, we have to ask, is the WeWork model still working? Joining me today in the studio to talk about this very topical issue is office sector lead Andrew Mercer. Andrew, thanks so much for joining us.
Hello, Mark.
Also with us is returning guest, head of real estate's market research, Bill Page. Hi, Bill.
Hi, Mark.
Welcome back to the podcast. Andrew, could you start us off by describing for me a little bit about what's changed in the office market? How is where we are now with these new players here different to 5, maybe 10 years ago?
So it's worth taking a step back and just looking at the drivers behind the flex market. And these could be categorised into two sectors. There's the change in the new generation of office occupier coming forward, so a drive towards experience and also service and hospitality. But we're also seeing a change in the way offices are used. So we're seeing technology fueling things like remote working, office efficiencies being driven through hot desking, and a growth in self-employed and consultants. So this has driven a range of new products coming to the market. We're still seeing a large amount of traditional leasing, it's fair to say, but there are some new products that have come to the market, and these can range from a traditional office which has been furnished and is being managed by the building owner through to serviced, where people have their private office but they're sharing facilities and maybe have an on-site manager, through to co-working, which is very much just having a plug-and-play space and just leasing an individual desk.
It's interesting. But Bill, I feel like when we think about these new spaces, I think everyone's mind just goes to these co-working.
Yeah, that's right, Mark. And I think the industry and the wider commentary on the sector has been guilty of conflating flexible offices with co-working, which is what has been front and centre of recent take-up. In reality, that's a small proportion of the flexible space offer. And more recently, most growth has come from more managed or what are termed enterprise-style solutions. So deals for companies requiring 50 desks or more. It's not just the one person startup in a shared space anymore.
I'm really glad you mentioned that, Bill. Andrew, could you give us a little bit of perhaps more of an insight into how LGIM as a traditional asset manager is approaching the sector?
I think the way we see it, Mark, is this is a permanent structural change in the way people occupy space, and thinking high level for a moment, we've seen this in the way people access music, Spotify or iTunes and so on, go on holiday through Airbnb, and that issue of long-term ownership or liability is changing. And in the real estate market, serviced office or flexible offices is not new. The recent rate of growth is what's notable, but we've seen longer-term structural trends. So lease lengths are coming down. So it's more appropriate and usual for occupiers to expect to occupy space for less time than they previously had to. We're also seeing, Andrew mentioned this, the service side and the specification of the offices themselves playing an important part. So occupiers are saying, these things are useful for recruitment and retention. They're also useful for their portfolio flexibility. And frankly, if you're a global corporate, it's quite useful to have a consistent office to occupy all corners of the globe as well. So they provide a real answer to these needs. We don't think it's a cyclical thing. We think it's a structural thing.
They've been around. They're not a new innovation, but the rate of growth is certainly a recent kind of phenomenon. I mean, I think from my perspective, as perhaps as someone sitting outside of the property market, of just seeing WeWorks on every corner within London. And I feel like WeWork is the public shorthand for these kind of spaces that we're talking about? What's the depth of the market?
The depth of the market goes much beyond WeWork. And you're right, WeWork have been front and centre in a lot of the analysis, both within the real estate sector and outside of the real estate sector, for obvious reasons. And their pace of growth has been staggering. But there is a real depth to the market beyond that. I was looking at some stats the other day across Europe, and there's no reason to suggest this is anything different in the UK, but the top two providers have about 40 to 50% of the market. So they are dominant. The top 10 have about 60%, but then the top 100 have almost 90%. So there is a massive tail of providers. And that can range from, one or two units to just one unit. But then you've still got these big two, which is, WeWork and Spaces or Regus, as they were once known. I think that does raise a prospect of consolidation in that long tail going forward, which is something interesting to look at. But there is a big depth to supply out
there. There's a real kind of wide range of these suppliers occupying these different spaces. Now, if we could look a bit more from an investment angle, perhaps, Andrew, from your experience, why does this market matter? Why does this sector of the office market really matter? And what makes it different?
I think it matters because in a very short space of time, people have changed their expectations of what they expect to get from their offices. I think there's going to be a huge growth towards environmental factors and sustainability and how that ties into productivity in offices. And I think this growth in this area will become increasingly important to occupiers.
But this growth, can it hold? We've been in such a period of a boom year for economic growth and market returns. Can it be explained by that, or is there other demand drivers really pushing forward this rapid growth that, as you said, Bill, we've really seen in the recent years?
So there are other things at work here, and changing the geography to London for a second, the flexible space market, and I would emphasise that kind of broad definition, because there are aspects within that from the co-working, which we associate with WeWork, perhaps wrongly, but and more conventional serviced offices and managed space and so on, all under that umbrella. That's driven up to 20% of leasing volumes in London in recent years, compared to a long-term average of anything between 1 and 5%, depending on what stats you've seen. So it's driven an element of performance. Whether it's driven capital value growth is a more nuanced point, because the market is still grappling with how to value buildings with many of these operators within. And the differences, this is a very long topic, but the differences depend on whether they are let on a conventional lease, effectively, and then the operator effectively sublets or lets that space out on licenses to its occupiers, or whether the landlord takes some sort of operational upside or shared downside risk within that. And if you are an investor in an office building, you look at whether your risk is compensated. So there are different layers of risk depending on the type of operation you have in your building.
And how much do valuations really play in that? When you look at, kind of, say, the traditional managers, is this a reason why they haven't rushed into everyone's a co-worker now or everyone's offering these fully serviced models?
Yeah, I think this is a really important point, because in some ways, the way you value these operational businesses in terms of real estate is really difficult. And one can't just take an operational building like a hotel and say, well, we can just use exactly the same model for flexible leasing, because there are all sorts of things in play in terms of the knowledge of the valuer to be able to use those methods in terms of the data that's available, which is a huge issue in terms of the transparency around flexible providers being conscious not to release some of their data into the market. So it's been a really difficult space, and in some ways has been a positive, I think, for this market, because it has slowed perhaps the growth in which it could have gone.
It could have been even more rampant than it already was.
I think it could have been. So I think that's a positive sign. But the other part of it, of course, is that I also think that there are some valuation benefits still to be had once these models start to be, there's some evidence in the market that allows the valuers to put the right value onto the on the space. So I think there's two parts to it. I think the traditional building owner, I think, probably has been right to be hesitant to jump into something that has moved so quickly and has expanded so quickly. And as these valuation issues start to work the way through and we get evidence in the market that will assist the valuers in putting the right values on them, and the technology is more widely used by marketing, that will allow the traditional owner to start using different language in their marketing, so pound per desk per month rather than pound per square foot. I think you will start to see quite a rapid change in who's providing these spaces.
So it's really kind of disrupting these new entrants, or rather these new approaches to flexible working, flexible office space, have really disrupted the way that everyone has been talking about the office market, or will, or has the potential to disrupt kind of the language, the way that we understand the office sector.
I think that's right, and deservedly so to a great extent. So you know, we like to think at Real Assets we're a more progressive owner of office space, and we have been quite consistent in our beliefs around being better on occupier service and being more flexible around lease terms. But if you rewind 2 or 3 years and look at the London office market, traditionally, leasing demand is quite a cyclical thing. It waxes and wanes in line with the economy. But you could always hang your hat on the kind of sub 5,000 square feet market, which is relatively small in the London context, always being stable. There always being a good churn of occupiers there. And if you had a building, for instance, with 5,000 square foot floors and you can multi-let it, it would always perform quite well. As soon as we saw this escalation in flexible space market in London, a lot of that direct leasing market fell away. So we saw a kind of bifurcated market where overall vacancy rates, so amount of supply risk in the market, were low, but they were increasing for the smaller units of space, which
were smaller units, which were deemed to have been a safer bet than perhaps the larger ones.
Exactly. So the traditional owners had to react, and I don't think there's any shame in saying there has been a reaction rather than proaction here. There was a reaction, and that reaction varies, as Andrew said, in terms of the type of exposure, the type of risk you would want to take in this market.
And how would you say that occupiers have responded to the capsule method that Elgin has brought in?
So I think there's two sides to this. That the first thing that all institutional and larger property owners have explored and have found some great success with is furnishing their space and actually fitting it out to what was traditionally called a Cat B fit out. So it's over and above just the ceiling and the floors. And providing a work-ready environment. So occupiers could just come in, put their desk down and start to work. And the real benefit for occupiers is this reduces the barriers for them to lease the space. So it's quicker for them, it's easier, and it's cheaper. So that's one side of it. But the other side is sort of the softer side, where big property owners have realised that the traditional way of the way that they treat their occupiers, you know, if you go back 20 years, you know, you would sign up to a 15-year lease, sign the lease and probably not speak to your occupier for another 14 years until the lease is coming up. But those days are now gone as leases have tended to get shorter. And actually that relationship with the occupier is everything on a short lease. And if you want to make sure that your space remains let, you need to be aware of what is driving your occupier, what they like about the building, what they don't like about the building, where their business is headed, and that there's definitely a drive on that softer side. And I would say some are doing it better than others, but that it's everybody is headed in the same direction.
So it's really about redefining that relationship between your occupier and your owner in that sense, because you now have to understand so much more about what is it that your occupier wants from your space. You can't just say, here's 5,000 square foot of office space, buy your own desks, we'll see you in 15 years. Now it really is that kind of two-way relationship of they want these things or furnishings in place before they agree to their tenancy agreement.
Yeah, absolutely. And the next piece to that, that's coming around the corner really quickly, is the environmental and productivity performance of the space. So the use of technology to measure things like air quality, humidity, and temperature it's not going to be long before people are going to be able to do it on their telephones.
Precisely.
And I you know, my personal view is that this is where I think the larger property owners could start to differentiate themselves from the operating business models that are currently in the market, where perhaps they don't own the central plant and they don't have so much ability to make tweaks to improve that sort of performance.
Absolutely, Bill. You've actually talked about this, about well-being in the office space on a previous episode of the podcast, fascinatingly, where you had predicted that these are things that people are really going to start checking for themselves, that you can come in and say, you know, you'll have a dashboard which can say the air quality is this, or, you know, the temperature is that, and therefore, do you feel comfortable, do you feel uncomfortable?
Exactly. And, you know, the issue of productivity in office environments, again, is not new, but the ability to measure it in a robust way has come on leaps and bounds in the last couple of years. And realistically, it's only been the 4 or 5 years since there's been new certification in this field, which has really pushed owners on. And Andrew's right. We have a good opportunity here because we control the entire building. We can make sure that building specification works in the best way for occupiers. And you know, turning this back to what it means for investors more generally, is that ultimately, and bringing this back to investors, it's all about income return. And income return as a proportion of total return is about 3/4 of your total return. So making sure you're managing those income streams is really important. And doing this right, getting the service level right, getting the environment right so it fosters the most productivity you can get out of that space should result in occupiers wanting to stay in those buildings for longer. And it's almost humanizing that row on your Excel sheet about your income stream and reducing the risk associated with occupiers leaving at lease break and expiry. So if you are building this into an IRR, you can attach a different probability or a different viewpoint on that lease break risk. And you know, it's early days for us in this process, but we've got conviction that this is the right thing to do for our investors.
So I'm so glad you say that, Bill, because I'd really love to delve a bit further into what it is how Elgin approaches this space. Andrew.
So we've been looking at all sorts of initiatives that allows us to get our occupiers in quicker, to ease the process and just make it simpler for them and cheaper for them to move in, but while still creating a good return for our investors. And what we found really successful is putting a name to that, which we've used to represent our innovative solutions that we're adopting to satisfy the evolving occupier market. The name we've used is Capsule. And the reason we've used that name is that we believe that it's easily identifiable in the market. It's allowed leasing agents and online brokers to relate to our flexible approach and promote it to their occupiers. And it's allowed us to be, rather than property by property leasing solution, but actually have an owner's solution. That this is Legal & General's solution to the flexible market at the current time. And that's most important when you move out to the regions. Mm. So we've been particularly successful in Aberdeen, which is a difficult market, and in Reading, where we've done a number of our capsule lettings.
So what is the response? Because, and forgive me, gentlemen, but Legal & General is not perhaps the WeWork. We're not a tech startup. We'll probably never pretend to be a tech startup. We are very traditional in this space. And yet I imagine that it confers a lot of benefits. Of this is Legal & General now offering these sort of this method of approach. What has been the response from both occupiers and from investors of Legal & General with Capsule?
I think there's two sides to it, because that there's the trusted owner part of being a Legal & General building, and there's no doubt that occupiers relate to that. And as there's more instability in the larger flex providers, that becomes more important to occupiers. occupiers, especially larger occupiers, when they're looking to take flexible space. So I think that's incredibly important. In terms of the benefits to the investor, we've been quite surprised by the reaction of our occupiers. So when we started on this process, we were expecting the flexible part of our offer to include lease term. So we're expecting our terms to get shorter. Actually, when we took it to the market, we found that the market liked our product. They liked the ease of being able to move in, and they were happy to actually sign up for longer leases rather than shorter leases. So we're now in a position where we've got longer leases. The voids, when we bring it to market, are pretty much non-existent. So our sub 5,000 square foot void is pretty much zero. We're able to grant lower incentives. So usually on a leasing transaction, and serviced are no different, they will provide a period where there's no rent paid. Those incentives have fallen dramatically, sometimes by as much as 80 or 90%. And we're driving premium rents. So whilst we've got the costs of doing the fit out, that is by far outweighed by all these benefits that it brings to the investor. And we're finding that it's on almost every case bringing the investor a good profit.
So it's clear that these traditional managers are bringing this new approach to the market. What does the future look like? We've seen this rapid increase in growth. Is that going to continue as more players become more players get involved, or will it peter out?
I think what we'll see is a blurring of the definitions. So at the start, we talked about definitions, and at the moment they are important because you've got this broad, flexible space market. Within that, you've got traditional serviced offices, you've got co-working, managed space, and so on. And at the moment, they do fulfil kind of reasonably distinct niches. But ultimately, it comes down to service and flexibility in lease terms. And going forward, you know, good office product will be flexible product. And you know, 5 or 10 years' time, we won't be agonising over these definitions. We won't be agonising over the legals and the lease terms so much. It will just be what the market does in a significant proportion of cases. And that in itself is important. So I mean, a couple of years ago, when the disruptors were really aggressively getting into that space, they were comments like the days of the traditional landlord are unnumbered. I don't know how much that was tongue in cheek at the time, but
made for a good headline.
Yeah, exactly. But the traditional owners have responded and responded well. Certainly not complacent, and we know there's a lot more we could be doing. But across a UK office portfolio, investors have the ability to have a proportion that is flexible and a proportion that is more traditionally let. And we shouldn't remember that there is a portion of the market who still wants a traditional kind of tenure. And, you know, we do deals on 25-year leases when it works for both parties. And we do have occupiers who maybe don't want the shorter leases and the full managed service. So the market will produce outcomes that are relevant to a variety of consumers of space. It's just that the flexible part is growing in a proportion. You know, will it continue to grow at its current pace? You know, probably not, because this current pace has been exceptional and it's been led by investment. But that's not the same as saying that the current proportion of office stock that is flexible is unwarranted. It's not alarming in terms of a proportion of building stock, and there's more growth to come there. I don't expect the recent pace to be repeated.
Interesting that it's going to become a much larger part of the overall sector pie, but perhaps not the investment level we've seen flow into these providers continue at that pace.
Yes, I think we've seen significant investment recently. Led by the key example, but other providers have had to keep pace to compete. The occupancy rates within their products are reasonable. People are using this product, and what they provide in terms of flexibility, service, and environment is good, and it's demanded by the marketplace. Some of the drivers are difficult to statistically prove cause and effect, and that's me with my research hat on. You know, and Andrew mentioned it earlier. Yes, we know there are more startups. Yes, we know there are more one man or woman bands out there who require flexible space, but you can't necessarily prove the uptake in flexible space market with those economic changes. Mm-hmm. It's much more a kind of structural change in the way we want to use space, and it suits corporates as well as those small companies, and those things aren't going away.
So it comes back to that, really providing the occupier with the flexibility that they need and the right solution that they're looking for, whether they are a corporate looking for that kind of co-working space, or you know, someone who does prefer the real long-term nature of a 25-year lease, whatever works for them, just having that flexibility as a manager.
I think that's right. And I think ultimately it comes down to choice. And there will be different providers out there that will provide different products. So whether that be the term they provide, whether it's the pricing point, the quality of the space, perhaps the culture of the space, whether they provide a community, whether it's events, business support, building design. There's a whole raft of specialist companies that have set up that will tailor towards particular demand. And we don't see that necessarily going away, but it is worth, as Bill said, being aware that this is still a small proportion of the market in single digits in terms of central London. So it is a small part of the market. We do see it growing, but we also see the traditional property owners also starting to compete more and more as that valuation and some of the blockages that are there for them at the moment start to fall away and evidence starts to be created in the market. So it's going to be a really interesting few years. And, you know, I do expect to see providers and products evolve.
So this approach is very clearly most prominent in the office space. Is this kind of disruption likely to come to the retail sector or perhaps the industrial sector as well?
Yes. In a word, but let me expand on that. There's nothing to suggest this whole issue of space as a service and reducing long-term liabilities for occupiers is an office-only strategy. You know, to an extent, we've seen similar things happen in the residential, where we've got the build-to-rent product, which is all about good service and flexible terms. We do expect it to come to industrial and retail. There's been more commentary about that recently. In terms of how it works, it still remains to be seen. Realistically, yes, you can have some sort of shared area. A owner can take a more proactive role of, in terms of reducing leases, increasing service. But the service in an industrial park is different from an office building. So, you know, central fleet of forklift trucks, or for instance, things like that. That's what we're grappling with there. You know, retail is a whole different issue. It's a sector of property which has structural challenges at the moment. But we are seeing more and more retailers or manufacturers even use retail property as a way to showcase their brand. So many and varied brands within the same space in one unit shop. So a bit like a department store concept, but within one shop, that changes daily. So it's the same kind of facility where the real estate provides a platform for flexible uses and the most effective way for people to operate from property.
When we look ahead, Legal & General has reacted to this in the face of this disruption. What does the future hold for you and your team when it comes to the office space market?
We've certainly not ruled out setting up a Legal & General serviced office product, but we are conscious that we do need the right voids in the right locations, and at the moment we just don't have those sorts of voids in that scale. But we're also conscious that we'd like to see this new subsector to the property market go through an economic cycle, just to determine its resilience. What we are doing, however, is partnering with some well-respected and established operators in the market. So we're doing joint ventures on a property-by-property basis, and that has a number of benefits. Not only does it give us the ability to share in the upside that is being created by these operational businesses in terms of shared profit, but we're also learning from them. Those lessons will be learnt in the future if and when we were to roll out our own serviced office product. What we are doing, I think, in the more shorter term, is entering into the managed space. So this is a natural progression to our capsule space, so just furnishing the space. The next part will be not just about leasing and making leasing easier, quicker and cheaper, but actually going into the occupier's demise once the leases have started, and doing things like cleaning, the maintenance, maybe providing food and beverage. So the occupier can get on with their day-to-day business and leave the property aspects of their business to the experts. And that feels like a natural progression to me.
Fascinating. So as we draw this conversation to a close, gentlemen, is there anything, what are the key things that investors should take away when looking at the flex office market? Andrew, I'll start with you.
So we've seen new operational service businesses that have been able to react quickly to changes in technology and occupier needs. And whilst these models will evolve and providers change, the market shift towards occupier choice and experience, service, sustainability and environmental performance are here to stay.
And Bill, what's the key thing?
For me, it's much the same. This is the new normal. This is a structural change that has been coming for some time. It's not going away. The investor community is rapidly getting used to offering more service and more flexibility, and those that do that the best will outperform.
Flexibility is absolutely crucial. Well, thank you so much to both of you for joining us today on the podcast. Andrew, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Mark.
And thanks, Bill.
You're very welcome.
And thank you for listening. If you'd like to learn more about Andrew and Bill's research and the Capsule Initiative, be sure to search Legal & General Capsule. See you again next Wednesday for another episode of Elgium Talks. If you've enjoyed listening to this podcast, you can leave us a rating or maybe even a review if you're feeling particularly generous on the Apple Podcasts app. It really helps new listeners to find us, and we're always on the lookouts for new ways we can improve. As a reminder, this podcast is intended for investment professionals and shouldn't be shared with a non-professional audience. This podcast should not be taken as an invitation to deal in legal and general investments. Any views expressed during this recording belong to the individuals and are based on market conditions at the time of recording and do not reflect the views of Legal & General Investment Management. Legal & General Investment Management is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. For full terms and conditions, please visit our website. And remember to share this podcast with your investment professional friends, colleagues, or even family members. And to find more great content from Legal & General Investment Management, check us out on Twitter, LinkedIn, and our website.